Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're tackling a subject that transcends Indian country, as virtually all our topics do. We're looking at the topic of mental health and some exciting, innovative therapies that can make a difference for you, for those that you love. To aid me on this really exciting journey is Dr. Brian Mears. Brian, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, sir. I'm excited to be here.
Brian, your name is not a strange name to many people in the mental health field. They know you as the founder and CEO of Alleviant Integrated Mental Health. You've been working throughout the country and internationally with programs, but you've got a fascinating background, and I think a lot of the people that even work with you probably don't know a lot of the details of how someone who's with the background of a nurse anesthetist, if I'm understanding correct, has pivoted into mental health. Have I got the plot straight?
Yes, sir, you have. I once was a CRNA. I still hold that licensure. I work, occasionally I'm at the hospital just to maintain my licensure, but I did pivot into psychiatry. It is an unusual trip.
You say unusual. I've been in the healthcare field for decades, and I don't think I've run into anyone in any aspect of anesthesia that ended up not only a mental health professional, but actually running mental health facilities. There's got to be a story behind this, and my listeners love stories, so we're all ears.
Well, thank you. I'd love to share my story. I think anytime we have big pivots in life, there's probably a unique story that led to that pivot. And going from a career in anesthesia, which was a great career for myself, my wife also does anesthesia for a living, I had a wonderful career. Not only was I very skilled clinically and had a wonderful clinical career, but I became an educator. So I was on the admissions committee of a university. I taught many different classes in anesthesia. I was an elected director of the state of Florida for all anesthesia. I testified in front of different congressional committees and was very involved in the system of anesthesia. Ended up doing consulting at some of the largest hospitals in the country to help refine their anesthesia departments, help streamline and help improve overall care modalities. I've also created a number of unique things in anesthesia. So I love it. It was a great, great field. So for me to pivot from there, it took, moving a mountain. And so the mountain in my life came in the shape of children.
Well, that sounds like a story that a lot of people in Indian country and elsewhere can relate to.
Well, this world is a challenging place, and many people do struggle with mental health problems. The issue with me is I wasn't around that. I came from a very conservative family that was well-grounded, great relationships. We had no mental health struggles that I was aware of in our family. And so it was just not a world I was used to. So in the anesthesia world, again, I put people to sleep, therefore I didn't deal with them much. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really still introduced into the field of mental health. But then something very unique happened. And my wife and I had been married for 13 years. And for whatever reason, we had no biological children. Mm-hmm. So at 13 years, we found ourselves overnight, unexpected, the parents of 7 children.
Whoa.
So we went from 0 children to 7. In one day, unexpected.
So nothing you were planning? You weren't trying to adopt kids? Wow. So
no, sir.
These are kids that ranged in age, I'm assuming?
Yes, sir. They range from exactly 24 months up to 18 years old. An entire family. They were our nieces and nephews from my wife's sister. They lived across country. We saw them occasionally, but we were just their aunt and uncle that knew them somewhat, but didn't know them well because we lived on opposite ends of the country. We mm-hmm. lived in Florida. They lived in California. So overnight, we became their guardians and then their parents. So that was a transition into the world of mental health. Why? Well, number one, as I think any listener could recognize, that would be a great strain and stressor on anyone. You know, we were at that point, we had to learn how to raise little children, 2 and 3 years old. And then we also had to learn how to deal with conflict with 18-year-olds.
Wow.
And everything in between. And there was, as everybody could expect, there was some trauma involved in a transition that was an immediate transition like that. Trauma for everybody, including us and the children. Mm-hmm. So that was the introduction into mental health. It was, I knew that there was a problem and now I needed a solution. And the solution required, well, we felt like professional help. We wanted professional help. So as I was very connected throughout the state of Florida, I started asking my colleagues, many of which were very well-known physicians, who should I seek help from? And interestingly, I got no real referrals, nowhere.
So you mean they were reluctant to refer people, or they didn't know folks? What was the reason why no one gave you any names?
Two reasons. I would say first is, when you're talking about your own children, the people that I asked for the referral to, I wanted them to think, who would they send their own children to?
Mm-hmm.
Big question there in mental health is, who do you go to? Because not everybody's the same. Not everybody's trained the same or has similar belief systems. And so they were hesitant, just on knowing my belief system as a very conservative Christian person, on who to refer to.
Okay.
So I think that that was one barrier, is they didn't really know who was the right person to refer to. But the second very big barrier was timing. You see, there was huge wait times in mental health, something, again, I was unfamiliar with. I worked at hospitals, so if you needed us, we were always there.
Mm-hmm.
But in outpatient mental health, I had no concept that there were very large wait times. So when we did start seeking care, we learned that the wait times were many months to even a year for some people.
Wow.
So we just couldn't find help. So we ended up seeing our primary care physicians rather than somebody trained in mental health.
And what kind of a journey was that when you see a primary care provider and you're dealing with kids who have mental health issues?
It was tough because our three-year-old at that time, again, he was 35 months old when we got him. The day that we picked him up, I believe that we had a significant problem. This child at that time, he could not track, meaning he could not maintain eye contact. He couldn't pay attention to really anything. His eyes moved around. If you will, visualize eyes kind of rolling around. Mm-hmm. That was him. Secondly, as soon as we saw him fall asleep, we knew that we had a significant problem. He had severe obstructive sleep apnea.
Really?
Severe. And so he simply could not breathe. So much so that he would turn blue. He would start profusely sweating. His work of breathing was so heavy
He
simply, he could not breathe. So a little chin lift and he could breathe again. Thankfully, because we were doing anesthesia, we knew pediatric ENTs, and I was able to get him in right away. And of course he had significant hypertrophied tonsils, and he had large adenoids, and he just had obstructive sleep apnea. So we had to do surgery. Thankfully, he came to us in time. We were able to remove his problem, and then his obstructive airway issues went away. But that probably led to some of his mental health issues.
Wow.
Because I believed the way he presented himself, again, not being in mental health, he presented at 3 years old as a child that I would think was autistic.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, after he started oxygenating his little brain, he improved. But he did have severe ADHD.
Hmm.
And it was so bad that really, when he was in first grade, the school said, listen, he can't come to regular class anymore. I mean, he simply can't pay attention. He can't sit still. Sweet kid. But he was always getting up, hugging the teacher, like just spontaneously. Uh-huh. And they're like, we love him, but he's disrupting class. And so they said this. I'll never forget this. The teacher and the principal called me and they said, if he is not on medications, he cannot come back to class.
Mm.
And at that time, I was not still in mental health, but that was a profound statement. I was like, whoa, I mean, you're a school telling me to put my kid on medicines. And if I don't, he cannot come to regular class. So I took him to primary care. So your question was, how did primary care manage? Well, that's how they managed. When I took them to primary care, it was immediate. They want to put him on a stimulant. They wanted to put him on a medication that had significant and profound effects. At that time, again, I knew very little about mental health. I agreed. I let them put him on a stimulant, and he did calm down, and he did pay attention, and academically he did better, and in school he did better. But there was consequences to that. That medicine did have profound effects on him. When we would give him the medicine, his bubbly personality and outgoingness, and just kind of the qualities of ADHD that many people like, the creativity and the energy, all of that went away. And so we had an immediate release medicine that would just, as soon as he would take it within 30 minutes, he just zoned out and he would just sit there. And so we went from this energetic little bubbly super personality to now he doesn't even really want to talk. So in class, it did control him, but I knew psychologically it had to be doing something to him, and neurophysiologically, it had to be impacting his brain in a way that probably wasn't very healthy. So we continued down that journey until I really got into mental health. But that was some of the precipice that pushed us over the edge and led me into this field of mental health.
So, when people first started hearing your story, I'm listening to you and we're thinking, well, yeah, boy, anybody's going to need mental health help for themselves if they just, inherited seven kids. But it's clear, I mean, you were dealing with some serious mental health issues among the children. And so you're looking for help, you're getting motivated, you've got this medical background, and you're starting to ask questions. But going from saying, hey, there's challenges with the system, it's hard to get in to see someone, to actually becoming a professional in the discipline and starting to open your own facilities, I mean, that's quite another story.
Yes, sir.
How does that come about?
I believe I was called to do this. I really believe I was called to do this because the medicines that my son was put on, I believe that they were impacting him probably in a negative way. Even though socially he was doing better, I felt like there's probably something that we're giving away, again, neurophysiologically, that we shouldn't, and that there can be long-term destructive kind of destructiveness in his brain. So that led me to research. And as I started researching, then it clicked. There is something to this mental health world that needs to be fixed. So long wait times, yes. Access to care, yes. Quality of care, yes. The type of care, yes. There were many blanks that needed to be filled in that I felt like I could do something about. So as I started researching this, I felt called to this profession. I had a business background before. I had already started companies previously. So I was accustomed to being an entrepreneur. So that did not scare me. But this I took this on as a true business in which let's fix the industry, not just a clinic. That's not why I started this. But I did start so I understood how to better care for my own children. And that led to, well, my children are no different than your children or anybody else's. So now we need to apply what I've learned and what we've experienced, and now this new knowledge base on how to treat people throughout the world. And it is working.
Now, the name of your organization is an interesting name, Alleviant. There must be a story behind that as well.
It's interesting you asked that. Of course, there is a story. So again, I had a business background prior to starting this. So one of the things that I knew was there is importance in names. Can't say I had the best names. I didn't really know what to do, so I created a list of names and we did a market analysis on that and we came up with the name Alleviant.
We want to hear more about this, but we have to step away just briefly. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I'm speaking with Dr. Brian Mears. He's the founder and CEO of Alleviant Integrated Mental Health Facilities. They're all over the country, all over the world. They may be in your backyard before too long. We're going to hear more about his story, more about amazing things that can make a difference for you, your tribe, your family, the world. Am I being too optimistic? Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at AIANL.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, AIANL.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA service center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. My guest today, Dr. Brian Mears. Dr. Mears is the founder and CEO of Alleviant Integrated Mental Health Facilities. Brian, we were talking about the name Alleviant, and when I first heard the name, I'm thinking alleviate. Is that a play on words for that name, or is it something else?
You hit the nail on the head, yes. When we were looking at different names, one of the goals in my company was we want to alleviate pain and suffering. We want to alleviate you from the symptoms of mental health, and then we want to alleviate the root cause of why you are sick. So alleviate did not sound great for a company, but as we did a name play and a market analysis, we sent the word out, Alleviant, and saw how the society responded, and they responded positively. So here we are at Alleviant.
Very good. So one of the things I love about what you're doing, I know a lot of folks who operate in the kind of public education space, and I first learned about your work. I heard about you and the work you were doing. I was doing some meetings myself. I was invited to do some health lectures in Little Rock, Arkansas some years ago, and heard about this Dr. Brian Mears. We never had a chance to meet then, but then I learned about your presentations, actually heard your presentations at the EQ Summit. I wasn't there in person, but was able to listen to the recordings. Many people know the name of Dr. Neil Nedley and the great work he's done with mental health. He has this conference every year, if folks are not familiar with it. And you were a presenter in 2025 there and was really inspired by what you were sharing, your story, the kind of work that you're doing. And one of the things that resonated with me as I learned about your work is I saw you had this passion for education, but you weren't just trying to sell people stuff at every turn. I mean, a lot of people that are often sometimes doing some good things, they've got all these products and stuff they're trying to sell. But I really see you as an educator, especially. You've got a blog, a website that anybody can just access for free. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, thank you for bringing that up. That is correct. I do not sell anything. We do have a clinical care model where we care for people, but we don't have our a line of anything, so you can't purchase anything from us. I care deeply about educating and empowering people with information so they can stay well and never need us. That's the goal. And I know that sounds counterintuitive for somebody that owns clinics, but the reality is people are already sick and we'll never be. We don't have a society right now that looks stable enough to not need us. But we need to create a society in which people are resilient and well. So I have a blog on our website. Our website is alleviant.com. That is spelled Alleviant.com. And there is a blog on there. Yes, sir.
And let me make sure I'm getting this straight. Alleviant, that's your clinic's name. It's also the website, Alleviant.com.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Okay, so we got that. When we go there, we're finding, you said, some blogs.
Yes, if you go to the top of the page under resources, you're going to see just three things under resources, and one of which is Alleviant blog. Under Alleviant blog, you're going to see articles that I've written, and every week we produce two articles. And I'm really thankful for this. We're actually building right now, as we speak, a full production studio that will be ready May 1st, in which I'll also be filming content now. Again,
Wow.
all that will be free. Right now, it's a bunch of written content, though. And so I talk about everything that's really related to just lifestyle and how can you stay healthy and resilient.
Wonderful. I love the vision. I love that you're putting this stuff out for free. So if you're tuning in today and you're enjoying Dr. Brian Mears, take advantage of some of these resources he's got at Alleviant.com. Brian, we have to talk about one of the things that to me was pretty revolutionary. I'm not a mental health professional, but as a primary care provider, I see a lot of people with mental health issues. I had not heard of what you're calling objective psychiatry. Tell us a little bit about what that is and why people may want to take note.
Well, Dr. DeRose, I am so excited about what we do. We are at a new era of psychiatry. Psychiatry historically has been largely based upon pharmaceuticals, and that's treating symptoms with medications to help decrease the burden of that symptom. But it doesn't really treat the root cause. It simply is a bridge that can lead someplace, but it should be used as a bridge. You, as a primary care physician, you're used to measuring data. And so you like lab work before you make decisions. You like vital signs before you make decisions. Well, in anesthesia, I would never put somebody to sleep without having vital signs or measuring tools for making sure that they're okay while we have them asleep undergoing surgery. But in psychiatry, we haven't had any vital signs for the brain. We simply function off of subjective data. And that is, you tell us how you feel, you tell us the symptoms that you're experiencing, and then based upon what you tell us, we're going to give you a treatment plan. It is, of course, there's so many potential errors in that. People sometimes they don't know the truth. Sometimes they simply tell us what they're feeling at that very moment, but that may override what their history really is. It's how do you feel right there, right now? And it can alter our treatment plans, and it can lead us down paths that we might not want to go down if we saw the whole picture. So, in objective psychiatry, we now do something that we are, in essence, measuring the vital signs of the brain. And yes, I appreciate the word revolutionary because it's never been done on outpatient psychiatry, where we use tools to look at the brain, measure the brain, and then we can correlate that to our treatment modalities and our treatment plans and hold our treatment plans accountable now. We can see how the brain is functioning before we start a treatment plan. We see how the brain is functioning during the treatment plan. And then once you're well, we can see how well your brain's doing. So we do that with something called spectral EEGs or electroencephalograms.
So folks have heard likely of EEGs. Maybe they've seen someone wired up with one with all these wires, going to the scalp. They're measuring brain waves. In medicine, this is considered a pretty low-tech thing. I mean, historically, I mean, they've been around for years. I do know of people in the mental health field that have been using these PET scans and other scans looking at functional aspects of the brain, but these are very expensive. You've taken this kind of old tried and true method that mainly I've seen people use for things like seizures, or they've used it when they're, you know, monitoring someone during a sleep study, but we haven't seen psychiatrists using it. So how did you end up adapting this to something that's useful in a day-to-day psychiatry practice?
Great questions. So EEGs historically are not used on an outpatient psychiatry basis. They're long, they're tedious, nobody wants them. They have leads with wires that have to be attached to the scalp. It requires gel or glue. It is uncomfortable. You have to sit still for a prolonged period of time, typically 45 minutes to an hour. And in psychiatry, they just haven't been useful. As you said, in neurology, they can be useful to identify seizures and locations. But in outpatient psychiatry, well, we would look at it as a bunch of squiggly lines that don't make any sense to us and sure don't have any diagnostic or clinical impact. So there have been some very brilliant people that have built out algorithms to convert a traditional EEG into now this visual vital sign. So I'll explain that real simple. In an EEG, you're looking at time on a horizontal axis. So from 0 seconds until you finish. Mm-hmm. So in a traditional EEG, that may be 45 minutes. So you're looking at a bunch of squiggly lines for 45 minutes, and you're trying to look for patterns. You're trying to see through all the squiggly lines to something that is clinically relevant. So some brilliant researchers have built out some mathematical algorithms to take all that data, and rather than look at it on a horizontal left to right basis, they turn it and face you. And so in essence, you're looking through a bunch of lines, not at a bunch of lines. And that tells us a lot different picture. So we can then consolidate the waveforms, put them into a picture, and we're looking at 19 different locations in the brain in one consolidated, simple, and easy to read picture in 19 locations that we're not currently saying we're using it for diagnostic capabilities, but we can see what's going on with the neurons in a way that we can tell you the symptoms that you're experiencing without you ever telling us. We can tell you diagnoses that you have without you ever telling us. We can see so much that's going on with the neurons in that region of the brain that it correlates clinically to the subjective data that patients tell us. So it's algorithms that are built, and then it's represented on our screens as a computerized image.
So let me see if I'm getting this correct. So I can remember my days as an internal medicine specialist. I had training in neurology. And I remember the neurologists in those days, I mean, it was actually physical EEGs. You know, they're looking through these papers, you know, reams of recordings. But if I'm understanding this new process that you're utilizing, instead of having pages to go through, there's just a single page of output that looks at 19 different regions of the brain. Am I getting the essence of this correct?
Well, kind of. It's actually not even a single page. It's a single picture. Hmm. And it's one line. It's not squiggly lines anymore. It's simply a picture of a line. And so now we look from left to right, but rather than looking at 45 minutes, we're looking at one series of time called hertz. And so on the average human brain, our neurons are going to fire a lot. And we're looking at something from 0 to 20 hertz, and we get a picture.
Okay, we got to make this more practical. I think I'm following along a little bit with a lot of medical background. If you're feeling like you're getting lost, those of you that are listening, and we're going to talk about some amazing things, how people can walk in, have one of these studies, and Dr. Mears and his team can basically know what's going on with them. We're going to talk about some of those stories, some of the applications for you. Don't go away. I'm Dr. DeRose. Dr. Mears is not going away either. We've got a lot more to come in the rest of today's show. Stay by.
American Indian and Alaskan Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaskan Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Dr. Brian Mears is my guest. He's been speaking about a discipline that's really just emerging. Some are calling it, as Dr. Mears does, objective psychiatry, actually looking at measurements, looking at brain measurements that can help us judge what's going on. Brian, I know in the last segment we were speaking about some of the technicalities of how you take these complex EEGs and with the help of some amazing scientists, you've condensed them into very simple graphics that someone can look at and quickly ascertain things. But tell us a little bit about how this works. Let's say someone with some mental health issues, maybe some brain health problems of various degrees, walks into your office. They say, hey, listen, I've heard about you. I'm not going to tell you anything. Put me on this machine and see if you can tell anything. Can you really tell much without a history?
Absolutely. I'd love to tell you a story real quick, if I may.
Please.
We had a 15-year-old who came in to see us. This 15-year-old had been diagnosed as autistic. We had never seen this kid before at all. We knew nothing about their history other than the mother said that they were autistic. They came in for an EEG. Once the EEG was complete, they came in to see us in a conference room, and there was about 10 providers in the room. We put the EEG up on the screen. The presenter had never seen this child, never heard of anything about this kid other than he was presenting for autism. The 15-year-old walks in, sits down. The mother walks in and sits down. The presenter, he looked at the screen and he looked at the child. This was about 5 seconds total. He looked at the EEG and he's read over 88,000 EEGs, by the way. So it was very rapid. He looked at it. He looked at the child and he said, I understand you believe you're autistic. The child was high functioning. And the mother and the child said, yes. And he said, well, I have news. And that is, you are not autistic. He said, you had an anoxic brain injury at birth. The mother started crying right then. This was within seconds. And he said, is that accurate? And she said, yes. How do you know that? He said, the neurons don't lie. I'm seeing your brain. I see the vital signs of your brain. It tells me everything I need to see. So two things happened in that very moment. The mother had never told anybody. She told people when the child was young.
Sure.
But now the child's 15. Nobody knew this information. So it confirmed that the technology we're doing, well, it's real. We can see the neurons and if they're injured or not. Then the child, more importantly than that, he lost the label of autism. You could see it right then in his face. He felt so much better about the world. Why? Because then we were able to look at this EEG and say, now we can help fix that. Yes, you have an injured brain, but we can work on your neurons. We can do physical therapy for your brain. objectively, and now we can measure how well you get. So in essence, we were able to start a treatment plan to rehabilitate his brain for a brain injury, and it worked.
That's an amazing story. And I'm gathering this is not a unique story.
No, sir. We have thousands of stories, of course. What we're doing now has become very popular, but what we're doing should become the standard of care. Let me explain why. You would never put somebody on a blood pressure medicine without checking their blood pressure. You could harm them. Mm-hmm. Likewise, you would never put somebody on a blood sugar pill without checking their blood sugar.
Of course not.
Yet in the brain, we put you on a lot of medications without checking your brain activity. Mm. Now we can check your brain activity as a baseline for medications we put you on, for lifestyle modifications we ask you to do, or for interesting things that we do objectively like NeuroSync. And that's using a type of transcranial magnetic stimulation to synchronize, optimize, and harmonize all the brain waves. So the point is, it can be a component of a treatment plan now where we can look at the neurons' health themselves and see, are your neurons responding to the treatment plan that we have prescribed to you? And some of that can be as simple as diet changes. Or I'm a Christian. Some of that can be, if we have many Christians that come to see us. And sometimes that's a matter of saying, hey, you know, I understand you're a Christian. If you read your Bible for 15 minutes a day, the likelihood of you decreasing anxiety and depression is great. Meaning, we believe that you'll decrease anxiety and depression just by being more mindful, by studying the Bible, by having prayer time. And we can see that neurologically. We see your brain waves calm down. We see anxiety start to drop in the neurons themselves. And yes, we can visually observe that data. So now we have a vital sign for the brain. It's amazing, and it should transform psychiatry.
Now, if I understand this correctly, you initially started by telling us about traditional EEGs, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever, setting the person up, whole laborious process. Am I understanding correctly that you've streamlined this with these techniques so it becomes just a fraction of that time commitment?
Yes, sir. Thank you for bringing that up. It takes us 4 minutes total to get the reading now. And the type of EEG we use, it's wireless, it's Bluetooth, it does not require any gel, no glue, no issues at all. We slide on this device over your head, 19 different contacts touch your head. It's very simple. Once we have it in place, we have you simply shut your eyes. That's all. You just shut your eyes. Why do we have you shut your eyes? And we have you in a darker environment. Mm-hmm. And we don't want you to be hearing a lot of stuff. Why? That activates the neurons. We want to see your neurons in all locations at a quiet state. So we're not doing anything. We're not guiding you. We just simply say, now close your eyes and do your best to be calm. All right. And then you sit there for 4 minutes. After 4 minutes, we complete the EEG. And then it converts from the squiggly data into this beautiful picture that we see neuronal health.
Now, what's been amazing to me, and I've, like I said, I'm just learning about what you've been doing, Dr. Mears, is I understand that, you know, some things that we don't always connect with mental health are things that may have brain relationships and direct ties to our mental wellness. Some years ago, I had someone who came to me with severe tinnitus or tinnitus, depending on how you want to pronounce it, really severe ringing in their ears. And most people would think that's a nuisance, but they really felt it was driving them crazy. I mean, to use that terminology somewhat loosely, but not necessarily so. Am I understanding correctly that even things that like tinnitus might be able to be helped by some of the techniques you're using?
Yes, absolutely. So when we're looking at neurons, think of what we're doing. We're looking at a set of nerves in the brain that deal with different functions. Two of the 19 regions called T3 and T4 deals with auditory processing. T meaning temporal, 3 meaning left, 4 meaning right. So we're dealing with areas directly over the left and right ear. We're dealing with hearing there. When we look at these EEGs, we can see the diagnosis of tinnitus. We can see ringing in the ears. We see the neurons are not calm. They're very elevated. Sometimes they have no defined waveform that we're looking for. We just see all neurons are very active all the time, and they're never being shut off. So when we see that, One of the things that we can do with our NeuroSync technology, otherwise called transcranial magnetic stimulation, is we can help calm those waves down. Now, that doesn't hurt. You don't feel anything. You literally, with our technology, you feel zero, nothing. We do this on children as young as 3 years old for autism, and we do this up to, well, as old as you want to be. You literally feel nothing. This is not regular transcranial magnetic stimulation. This is using the same device in a completely different algorithm that has such little power that we're simply soothing the nerves, if you will. We're calming the nerves down. So we're ringing in the ears. It's heightened nerve activity. We're simply calming the nerves down. As we do that, we'll see the neurons on your EEG start to flatten out, calm down, and the ringing in your ears also will calm down. So we do that two ways. Number one, we're visualizing that data, but we're doing subjective scales on that. And so each week, it's every fifth session, you're required to fill out a new subjective questionnaire for whatever you're struggling with, whether that's sleep issues or depression or ringing in the ears or autism. So you're filling out that data sheet. And so subjectively, you start to see your scores are improving. The ringing in your ears is going away. And we see that at the physiological level with the neurons calming down as well.
Wow. So this is amazing technology. And I know this is gaining broad acceptance. You're setting up clinics actively throughout the country, throughout the world. I don't know. Do you have clinics anyplace in Indian country right now?
Well, we are actively building in Arizona, and we're actively building in Nevada. We're actively building in Kansas. I have a series of clinics in Arkansas right now. We are doing consulting work out of the country. We're setting up clinics as well. So the answer is, if we're not in your community, we're coming very soon. We're under a very aggressive growth strategy where we are setting physical practices up. We must have on-site practices to be able to deploy these physical modalities that we have for treatment. So the answer is, if we're not in that community and people desire what we're doing, we're willing to look at that community. And that's just a matter of reaching out to us also. So if you go to our website and you go to the contact information, you'll see general inquiries. Anybody can get on general inquiries and request that we consider their community. And, you know, my business is all about relationships. It's about referral relationships.
So let me see if I've got this right. We're talking about going to the website we mentioned earlier that has your blog, Alleviant.com. Am I correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. So someone goes to Alleviant. Spell that one more time for us, please.
It's spelled Alleviant.com.
Okay. And so maybe a tribal council person is listening, maybe someone who runs a tribal health clinic. And they're saying, hey, this sounds like some technology, something that we'd like to use. You're encouraging them to reach out to you, and you're open to helping them develop something?
Absolutely. So they would go to our website. They'll go to the top. They'll go under contact, and they will go to general inquiries. Under general inquiries, they will see a field that they can sign up for and leave a message. When they leave a message, if they are desiring consultation on potentially bringing our clinicals model, our system, into their community, that will make its way to me or other people that can handle that. We would encourage that. Why? Mental health has far too long had a stigma around it. We talk about the mind and the way the mind fails, and you shouldn't feel this way. You know, you've got it good. Look at this great family you're in, or blah, blah, blah. And we misapply what mental health really should be. I think of mental health as a component of brain health. The physical brain is under attack in our society. The physical brain has been decimated by our environment, by our food, by our poor sleep, by stress, by inflammation. There's so many reasons, like Dr. DeRoge, you're an expert on this field and how our physical body is destroyed by a lot of the inputs in the world, a lot of the toxins and deficiencies and stressors in the world. And then the problem is, still in today's world, we've largely segregated the physical body from the brain. But the physical brain is under attack. Now, I would encourage your listeners to think of it like this. If you are experiencing any symptoms of mental health, you have a brain disease, in essence. It's like diabetes for the brain. It's like hypertension for the brain. You have a brain disorder that we simply need to address.
Wow. So I love what you're doing. I love the advanced diagnostics. I also love the fact that you're not looking for long-term relationships, people to see you as a clinician for years and years. We want to talk about that when we come back. We're looking at solutions, not just Band-Aids. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got a final segment with Dr. Brian Mears, things that can make a difference for you, for your tribe, your community. It's all coming up on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Stay tuned for our final segment.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness, and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse, and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back for our final segment of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Dr. David DeRose with Dr. Brian Mears. We're speaking about a whole different approach to psychiatry, a whole different approach to mental health. Brian, I mentioned before we stepped away what to me was revolutionary. I mean, having seen patients who for years are in long-term relationships with psychiatrists, and we're not saying that there might not be a place for that in some settings, but you're really looking at a different model when folks come through your doors. Tell us a little bit about what's different as far as how your practice operates.
I believe that about 80% of the population do not need long-term mental health care. Yet we see most people that enter mental health care stay as long-term patients. What that means to me is we're not creating the bridge that they need to wellness. Many of the acute stressors in life that lead to the symptoms of depression or anxiety or PTSD are simply, well, they're unresolved. Therefore, they remain lifelong patients. Or you, in essence, become used to the medicines we're prescribed, and then we never take you off of them. And because of the world we live in, you come back to see us every 30, 60, or 90 days for a prescription refill. That's not the type of model that I desire, and nor do I believe that that is an accurate model that represents wellness. I believe that 80% of the population, and there's science behind the 80%, but I believe that 80% of the population should only see a short term. Why? Because the things that have led you to this moment in life where you're seeking care for depression or anxiety or PTSD, the temporary things in life, they should be dealt with on a temporary basis, because we can help you reestablish a normal for you, the best side of you. But we have to deal with the traumas. We have to deal with these issues and move past them and not keep you on medicines for life. And medicines can have significant side effects. And most patients, they don't really want to be on medicines for life, but they don't know what to do.
Right, right.
Yes.
I mean, the other thing to me that's remarkable about your practice, I'm active clinically and I'll see someone. In fact, there was just someone in my office this week who needed mental health services. I mean, it could be, I mean, it's not uncommon. We're talking months to see someone because it seems like there's such demand for mental health services and so limited. I'm working in an underserved area, makes it even more challenging. But you have a very different model. If someone calls, I mean, it's a short timeline, right?
It is. Back to my personal story, when my children needed help, I wanted to get them help. So that was one of the questions that I had to answer for our company and say, how do we create a company in which we can see people rapidly? So one of our guarantees to our referral sources, and we're largely referral-based, we get thousands of referrals, is we will see all new patients within 7 days of referral.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Yes. So that's fast, right? So it's 7 days from the time we actually connect with the patient. We can contact them and we talk to them. We get them on our schedule and we see them on the psychiatry side. So on the medical side, we will see them and establish care within 7 days. That changes psychiatry. Why? Because many of the needs in psychiatry, they're today. If we don't address them today and you wait 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, you can physiologically start to change and develop things like high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. You can start to develop these immune system reactions and inflammatory responses that can lead to significant physical health issues. We need to address the stress in your life right now. And the stress isn't always psychological. Many times there are physical stressors that lead to psychological consequences. We address that. And we're looking at all the stressors in life, biologically, psychologically, socially, spiritually. We're looking at stressors in your life that we can address that then we can help you get through in a short time and get you out of the system and let you be healthy.
So I've jotted down probably the most important website, at least as far as our dialogue. It's Alleviant, Alleviant.com. I got that correct?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Just always like that affirmation. And if I go there, I can find out if there's a clinic near me. I can access your blog if I just want to read some of the stuff that you're doing. You're going to be coming out with video content pretty soon. I can reach out to you if I'm in a tribal health leadership position or I'm someone without a native background and just want to see a Alleviant facility in my community. I can get all that at that website. Am I gathering that correctly?
Yes, sir. You should be able to find everything you need there.
Now, as part of your educational work, I've heard a rumor that you're preparing a new book. Is it too soon to talk about that on air?
I would love to talk about that. So I appreciate you bringing this up. I have written a book. I'm excited about getting this book out. It discusses some of the things we talked about in much more detail. The name of the book is Brain Health is Health, A New Era of Objective Psychiatry and Human Optimization. So you should be able to find this on all platforms. I'm excited to be able to share this because, well, we need to destigmatize mental health and we need to teach ways to maintain brain health, maintain brain optimization. So hopefully you never need to see anybody in psychiatry.
You know, the other thing I love that you're doing, Dr. Mears, is, you know, we mentioned earlier this stigma when it comes to mental health. People don't want that label. I mean, especially people that are used to being highly functional. Maybe they're in the public eye. Maybe they are in a tribal leadership position. No one wants to have the word get out, oh, they're depressed or, you know, they're not mentally strong. I mean, there's the stigma about all that. But the reality is a lot of us need, maybe we could put it in a positive framework, mental optimization. You are actually entering into contracts with large employers where you're saying, hey, let's forget about all the labeling and let us help your employees, your team function better. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. So I call that performance enhancement or brain optimization. So when we're looking at a vital sign, what we call spectral EEG, we're able to analyze that without labels. And so many times we see people that simply they don't want to acknowledge the struggles that they're having. And they don't want maybe the medicines or the treatments associated traditionally with psychiatry. But they do want performance enhancement. They want to feel better. They want to be more cognitively sharp. Or maybe they have early dementia and they don't know that they're sick. Mm-hmm. And we can help treat that and speed the neurons back up. That's called performance enhancement. So when we perform performance enhancement, you don't have to have a label for that. because all we're doing is treating the neurons under each region and helping optimize them. And then you function better, you think clearer, you respond better, and you feel better.
And the interesting thing about that model is, like you said, you don't need a diagnosis, but our medical system, at least as far as payers go, they want a diagnosis, they want a label. And it seems like you've been able to work around that by working with employers. Am I understanding that correctly?
So yes, we are doing contracts with government. We're doing contracts with law enforcement. We're doing contracts with employers. So where we keep people healthy. Why is that important? Insurance companies, like you said, it's difficult for them to understand a wellness model. How do they pay for a wellness model? I get it. I understand that's difficult to do. So what we've done is go directly to the employer to contract with them so that we can perform these spectral EEGs and help you maintain wellness in the event that, well, you don't get sick. If we have a resilient brain, you're less likely to develop long-term illness. That includes physical problems like concussion or TBI or tinnitus to things like depression or anxiety or PTSD. Your neurons are simply stronger and more resilient if we exercise them. So these are short-time exercises. They don't cost a lot, but it's still something that needs to be done. So employers have stepped up and started paying for this.
So when you're talking exercise, some of that is this transcranial magnetic stimulation that you're doing?
That is correct, yes.
But you're also doing things with lifestyle and you're giving people assignments, things like that, or how does that work?
Yes. So one of the things that we do is we understand cost can be a factor in everything that we do. And we see many people pile on cost in healthcare. Maybe intentional, maybe not intentional. I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to say for our patients, we include everything we can under your insurance. For example, we give health coaching for free here. Why? Health coaches are trained and certified in lifestyle management. They look at the toxins in life. What are the things that could potentially be keeping you physically and mentally sick? What are the environmental exposures? What type of diet are you on? And how could we help improve that? Health coaches, that's what they're trained in. So they write out lifestyle management plans. We include that for free in our treatment plan. We don't ask for extra cost for that. So things that we do like that helps long-term. And no out-of-pocket costs for our patients. I would encourage if there's any healthcare providers out there to figure that out like I did and start to employ other professionals at no cost.
We love what you're doing, Dr. Mears. Thank you so much for pulling away. I know you got a lot of balls in the air. Thanks so much for stepping away and joining us today.
Thank you, Dr. DeRose. It's been a pleasure.
Before we have to run, there's some folks that just jumped on or they've been driving. They finally pulled over. They said, come on, give me that website one more time. I want that blog or I want to talk with Dr. Mears or someone on his team about starting a facility. Could you give us that website one more time?
Yes, sir. The company name is Alleviant Integrated Mental Health, and my website is alleviant.com, spelled A-L-L-E-V-I-A-N-T.com.
Okay, Alleviant, A-L-L-E-V-I-A-N-T.com. And Brian, final statement from you. Why should someone at least visit the website just once?
If you have a brain, you deserve for your brain to be healthy. So get information that simply demonstrates how you can be healthy without living in the American model of pharmaceuticals. You deserve information of wellness.
Thanks again so much, Brian. That's Dr. Brian Mears, founder and CEO of Alleviant Integrated Mental Health. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Trust you've learned some things that will make a difference for you, for your tribe, for those in your community. As always, I'm Dr. David DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.